Words on Water. Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. I'm the host, Travis Loop, and I'm really excited for this episode. I'm here with Mustafa Ali, the Senior Vice President of Climate, Environmental Justice, and Community Revitalization for the Hip Hop Caucus. How are you doing?
I'm blessed. Thank you, Travis.
Absolutely. So what, for our listeners, what is environmental justice? What does that mean?
Yeah, well, you know, environmental justice should always be defined by communities, but you know, a definition that a lot of folks have used is dealing with the disproportionate impact in communities of color, low-income communities, and indigenous populations. Often those places that, you know, we forget about, those places that have been marginalized, those places that there's been disinvestment, whether it's in infrastructure or in some of the other positive attributes that need to be inside of all communities. So when we talk about pollution and the impacts inside of communities, we're also often talking about the environmental injustices that happen to those communities across the country, our most vulnerable communities, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And what does environmental justice mean when it comes to water? I mean, can you build that out for me?
Yeah, that's a deep question right there. And you know, we'll do the best. You know, when we think about water and the relationship to communities with environmental justice concerns, it really goes back to sort of the way a number of folks have framed it out, where we talk about water as a human right, because we know that if you don't have that, you know that the impacts are that eventually you're going to have a loss of life, you're going to have sicknesses if that water is impacted by toxins or other chemicals in many, many instances. And the connection has become very apparent over the last few years. If we look at Flint, Michigan, and the impacts that happened there because of, you know, a lack of infrastructure, a lack of opportunity for folks to engage on the local level and the state level and what goes on inside of their communities. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, of course, the pollution that unfortunately led who will follow those children who were exposed for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. And you know, the investment, the small investments that we can make sometimes in the beginning of a process can yield huge benefits, both on the public health side, the environmental side, but also on the economic side. Mm-hmm. And when we don't do that, then we see the types of things that we saw in Flint, Michigan with the impacts from the exposures to lead and now children having difficulty in learning. Mm-hmm. And you know, they'll probably have difficulty in being able to get employment. Mm-hmm. And some of them may have lack of health care and all the dynamics that go on in that space. But also when we talk about water and environmental justice, we're also looking at places like Standing Rock, where individuals are trying to stand up to make sure that we have clean water, especially the water protectors, and understanding there's a cultural component also in a connection that exists in that space to water and why we need to make sure that we're protecting it. In many instances, folks are, you know, subsistence fishermen and hunters. And when we begin to impact, you know, our precious spaces around our great country, then we begin to erode that safety net that exists and that precious resource that is water, which so many of us want to protect. Then we also have examples like the CAFO. Issues for some folks who might not understand a CAFO. We look at, you know, certified, operations,
animal feeding operations.
Thank you.
Where they've got lots of cows, lots of chickens, lots of pigs,
turkeys, those types of things. So if you look in North Carolina, the interesting thing there is that, you know, you have these lagoons, and sometimes those lagoons, there'll be breaches, and then they'll end up getting into our water bodies. You know, whether it's our creeks or streams. Or larger ones. And then sometimes we have bacteria and other things that grow out of that, listeria and other types of things. So we have to be very, very focused on our water quality, the access to water, and how it plays out in people's lives. Sometimes, you know, we're just used to being able to turn on the tap and the expectation is that clean, pristine water is going to come out of there. Because of some of the examples and others that have been going on, you know, folks are having less confidence when they turn that on. And that's why it's so important that we have authentic collaborative partnerships between utilities, between, you know, folks who are the recipients of the water that's coming out, from our local and state and federal government officials who have a role to play in that as well, and so many others. And when we can do that, we can begin to address these environmental injustices that are happening and actually help people to move from surviving to thriving.
Yeah. And I also kind of the access to sanitation. I was kind of stunned in the past, you know, learning about communities along the U.S.-Mexico border and Alaskan communities where they don't even have sanitation, toilets and wastewater, and that the public health implications that come from that. So there's all these different types of communities and issues in parts of the country for sure.
Yeah. And do people feel confident? You know, if we're talking about folks along the border and the colonies, you know, in many instances, they may not feel comfortable in engaging with either state or federal officials because of some of the other dynamics that we currently have going on in our country. And that does a disservice to folks because it also creates gaps in our protection. It creates gaps in our opportunity to get in front of some of these problems. So imagine if you had a situation where individuals were afraid to reach out to local or federal authorities about, you know, an impact that's happening in their water body. And then it just continues to grow and continues to grow. So that's one of the reasons that we really need to make sure we have a transparent process and that we are making sure that our citizens and our residents feel comfortable in engaging with folks. You know, I've worked both in the colonious issues. I've worked up in Alaska and seen, as you aptly sort of shared, you know, some of those impacts that most folks would never imagine are happening in our country. You know, we're one of the most powerful countries in the world. And there are folks along the Mississippi Delta, throughout the Black Belt, where I was just a couple of months ago.
In the Appalachia region.
In Appalachia, where I come from, you know, who still, you know, have lack of access to clean drinking water and the infrastructure, you know, that's necessary also in the disposal of certain things. So, you know, we got a lot of work to do, but I'm very, very confident that we can address these needs that are going on.
Yeah. You mentioned utilities a minute ago, and I talked about how a lot of our listeners are work in kind of the wastewater and stormwater sectors, a lot working for or with utilities and that type of thing. You've got a couple decades working on environmental justice. What's been just kind of your experience working with the utility sector and Yeah,
I've had some really good relationships. I've seen challenges over the years, you know, especially in the early days when we were still trying to get people to understand the impacts that were happening in our most vulnerable communities. But also through my work on the National Environmental Justice Advisory Council. And for those of you who may not know who are listening, that's a federal advisory committee that's made up of a number of different types of stakeholders, whether it's business and industry folks and utilities fall underneath of that, grassroots leaders, indigenous folks, state and local representatives, and a number of others. So it's really important because it helps to provide advice and recommendations to the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. So I had a chance over the years to work with a number of great folks in that space where we were thinking through a number of water-related issues. And then just being out around the country and working in communities as well with folks, you know, who had different types of challenges or those utilities who were looking for better ways of engaging with communities. Mm. You know, in many instances, if you're trained as an engineer, you know, you may not have necessarily been trained in public relations or engagement or a number of different other things that go on there. So we did a lot of work over the years also in helping people to get connected, helping to build trust between each other and to be able to help to sort of map out, you know, a new future, a new direction in some instances.
Yeah. So, I mean, kind of my next question was what types of things you think kind of that part of the water sector utilities could do better to help address some of these environmental justice challenges? I mean, so more engagement, you've mentioned a couple times, a couple ways that that's really a key area is to engage with folks and listen to the public. Other areas that come to mind or?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, over the years, whether it was air related issues or water related issues, one of the things I always suggested when possible, and I understand it's not always possible, is to open the doors to create transparency, invite folks in, let them see what the operations really look like, and then have a conversation with them about the challenges that are going on. You know, in some instances, folks don't realize that budgets in this space have been shrinking for decades now. And you know, that infrastructure in some instances has been around sometimes for 100 years. begins to crumble and people are like, well, just fix it. Mm-hmm. Well, there may be some other dynamics that are in that space. Now, yes, we do need to get it fixed. But for me, opening up the doors is one of the things. The other thing is working hand in hand together around different types of pieces of legislation, whether it's on the local, the county, the state, or the federal level. Mm-hmm. You know, folks sitting down and saying, so here are some of my priority areas and here are some of your priority areas. And we can find some common ground in these spaces. We might not agree on everything, but we can find some opportunities that exist there. The other thing, too, is, and I saw this over the past couple of years, is some of the worker training related types of opportunities.
Yeah.
Really figuring out ways of getting those folks who are in your community, when you are an entity in that space, whether you know you're an industry or you're a water utility, whatever it might be, figuring out how you can build a bridge between the community and maybe community colleges or local universities, and getting those local residents who are interested in this space of being able to get in. The other thing is being able to spend time, and that's folks who are in the utilities, actually going out to communities, to those, you know, those organizations that exist, and spending time, maybe helping them to break down some of the information that's necessary. You know, in many instances with those engineers and scientists sometimes who are in this space, they have that technical knowledge and they can help in working with local grassroots leaders to understand what's going on, demystify some of this stuff and build real relationships.
Sure.
For me, it's all about building authentic, collaborative partnerships. And that means that everybody has something of value. Mrs. Ramirez has something of value in being able to share maybe changes she's seen in the water quality over the years. Mm-hmm. That someone might not be aware of, or Mr. Johnson also can talk about, you know, the differences that he's seen over time, or how, you know, they may have been interested in getting someone who's a part of one of their organizations or family, you know, more collected, you know, connected to what's going on inside the utilities. There are lots of opportunities if we begin to sort of, you know, move in a direction where we're not afraid of each other, but we see opportunities to not only embrace our humanity, but to get together and think critically about what the future can look like.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, whether it's a technical challenge or a legislative issue or work for workforce development, that common thread is just engagement and talking.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
That's kind of a basic thing we need to focus on. One thing the water sector is concerned about is this, it's called affordability, mm-hmm. right? And you mentioned the need to invest in infrastructure, and there's tremendous needs out there because it's old and aging, and we got more development and people and the impacts of climate change. But, you know, at some point, the ratepayers have some role in bearing that cost, I guess, and then that's difficult when rates go up, and I think the water sector is wrestling with this affordability issue. Philadelphia just launched like rates based on income, kind of. They're the first utility to try this. What's just kind of your take on the affordability issue?
I mean, there's some real challenges in that space. So, you know, one of them, and I like what Philadelphia is, you know, taking a peek at, because we've got to get equity into the process. And we've got to get some fairness that's in there. We also got to have folks not being afraid that, you know, just because they may have limited income, that, you know, that their water may be turned off. And you see that instances of that in Detroit, where there's been some real challenges. And there are a number of other areas across the country also where, you know, folks are being shut off. You know, and in many instances, they may not even be able to, or they may not feel that they are even able to utilize or drink the water that exists. Mm-hmm. So we've got to address that. But I want to get to sort of a foundational element that sometimes we don't talk enough about. And that's the infrastructure. So we're going to have an infrastructure bill that's going to be coming up in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
We really need to get folks educated, since I don't lobby, I educate folks, on what are our expectations around infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So in many instances, we'll invest in bridges and roads, and most people think about that.
Right.
But we also need to be thinking critically about our water infrastructure opportunities and how that helps to strengthen our country and how it is able to help our most vulnerable communities to begin to have the same level of quality and access around water related issues. So I think that is an opportunity that's in front of us. And that's why I think it's so critical that we get all these different types of partners together now thinking about how do we sort of engage in this set of conversations and decisions that will be made so that especially across the country where we find some of our most not troubling, but some of the areas where we know we need to invest. Now, we can go all across the country and there are investments that need to be made. But why don't we focus on, you know, some of sort of the hot spots, if you will, where we know we have some real challenges and begin to rally around that and make sure that those resources are necessary. Because sometimes we have these conversations and we don't get to the crux of the matter, if you will. And for me, there have to be resources also. So if we can begin to engage and get the right types of new infrastructures in place with new technology, then hopefully we can also lessen some of the burden on our most vulnerable communities who have the least amount of resources, but there's a huge amount of need that exists. So I see that as one of those areas that we can really start to make some change. And I see that also connecting to being able to lower some of the rates that are necessary, or at least freeze some of those. And then think critically about how do we get other types of resources to our most vulnerable communities to help them to lower their bills.
I mean, it seems like this moment of opportunity, right? You've got consensus kind of across the political spectrum about investing in infrastructure. You've got a lot of kind of high profile water crisis stuff that's happened the past few years. Yeah. You've got a definite need out there with the state of things. So it's like, hey, here we go. Let's take this momentum and do something with it.
Yeah. If you look at Puerto Rico, it's a great example. Yeah. It's in the news. It's in the front of everybody's mind right now. And I hope that we keep it there.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the years that I was in the agency working, I actually had the opportunity to go to Puerto Rico and to train people. And here's an interesting thing, Travis. I remember one time in working with communities in the mountains that they were using bamboo as their water transportation, as their piping. And that's unacceptable. Mm. I mean, I appreciate the innovation of folks who were there and thinking creatively about how they could put a system together. But that's just one example of how when we don't have the right types of infrastructure, you know, how we're doing a disservice to folks, how we know that. You know, climate change is real. Mm-hmm. The impacts from these storms are going to be more intense. Mm-hmm. We know there's going to be more flooding. So as we are rebuilding our infrastructure in our country, then we should be thinking creatively about how these will play a role and how we get the right types of things in place so that we can protect the water quality inside of our country.
Even the water infrastructure in Houston area and in Florida, you know, those storms, it hit that infrastructure and there's an opportunity to rebuild in a more resilient way there.
And without a doubt. I mean, you know, Houston, Miami, Port Arthur, Beaumont. I mean, we can go down the list of those communities that have been impacted by the storms, and also flip the paradigm and begin to think about as we rebuild. How do we help these communities to be in a stronger and better place? How do we train those populations who are interested in moving into, you know, the job opportunities that exist in this space, which also helps to strengthen those communities and build a different type of infrastructure inside of those communities, an economic one? There are a number of opportunities that exist if we want to think what I often say in a 21st century way.
Yeah. So, you know, we've rattled off some of the things that have happened the past few years with Flint and the hurricanes. You know, we had the river and the drinking water in West Virginia get polluted a couple years ago, Charleston area, the Elk River.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We had, you know, the folks in Toledo, Ohio lost their drinking water for a few days because of harmful algal blooms a couple years ago. I mean, you have... there were harmful algal blooms in Florida last summer that cost, you know, impacted recreation and tourism. You've had all this stuff happen in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like a lot of the activist celebrities, if you will, a lot of their energy is focused around the developing world, you know, where, yeah, there's big issues with drinking water and sanitation. Mm-hmm. But I just kind of wonder what your thoughts are if some of the energy is it could be steered domestically, if you will, a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and like you said, the public awareness raises around these different crises in the U.S., but then where's the momentum from that? I don't know. I don't know where the question is there, but I think you see where I'm going.
No, I think it's an excellent question. So one, I think that it's great when people want to make sure internationally that places and spaces that normally don't have support or resources get some attention.
Absolutely.
But I think it's also equally as important that we also take care of home and continue to focus on, because we got a lot of places and spaces here that need resources and need help as well. One of the reasons I came to the Hip Hop Caucus was because of one of the campaigns they have. It's called People's Climate Music. So we have a number of artists and entertainers who are very, very focused on climate-related issues, environmental issues, civil rights issues, so forth and so on. Mm-hmm. You know, and we referenced Flint earlier. So we had individuals like Vic Mensa, who is huge right now, hip-hop artist, and Malik Youssef, who also, they were out there on the ground in Flint, working with communities, passing out water, but also helping people to connect. In Standing Rock, we also had a number of our folks, both from the Hip Hop Caucus family and artists and entertainers, who are also there on the ground, seeing firsthand and standing in solidarity with folks. We have artists like Antonique Smith, also, who's from New Jersey, who also engages with communities across the country in the rural context, in the urban context, and some of the issues that are going on. So at the Hip Hop Caucus, we understand what you referenced earlier, how important it is to have, you know, artists and entertainers and athletes who come from some of these communities who have some challenges to stay connected, but then to build a network of individuals and then to be able to help push real change to happen. And I'm seeing a shift that's happening. We're having lots of different types of artists who are beginning to get more engaged domestically on some of the things that are going on. So I think it's an exciting time. If you look at the People's Climate March, the Science March, the Women's March, so many of these other things that have gone on, where there are artists and entertainers who are getting engaged on the cultural level with the change that needs to happen.
Yeah. All right. Good, good, good. And I know you mentioned the People's Climate Music, and I think there was a cover done of Here Comes the Sun, and I'm going to close this podcast kind of playing that for folks, and it is available on iTunes, so people can go check that out. One of the other, I want to talk about two terms in your job title. One is community revitalization. You touched on it some, because you talk more about what role water plays in community revitalization.
Yeah, so I often talk about, and my work comes out of decades of work inside of our most vulnerable communities, being raised in the environmental justice movement by some of the really phenomenal leaders in that space, and understanding that we have some core elements. And, you know, working at EPA and other places, we know these core elements. One of them is protecting our air and how critical it is. The other one is water. Mm-hmm. And the other one, of course, is the land. And for me, in revitalizing vulnerable communities, so we're creating an institute in Spartanburg, South Carolina. That's the place where it took the $20,000 environmental justice small grant and leveraged over $300 million in changes in that community, which was labeled as the other side of the tracks.
Wow.
And in that space, you know, a part of that is actually some of the water bodies that were there in the community that had, you know, been polluted, you know, from landfill, sort of leaching, if you will. And then the other part of it was also a chemical plant that had been there years earlier, where there was some changes also. So we see those core elements as a part of the foundation of how change has to happen. So we're very focused on making sure the water quality and access is a part of our revitalizing vulnerable communities. When it is a component, that there's some challenges, because we're going to be doing work in different communities across the country. And we understand that if you don't address that, then you're leaving a gap, you know, inside of an area that's trying to change the dynamics that are happening inside of it. We also understand that for young people, having access to healthy water is so important in their learning. You know, so as we talked a little bit about earlier, when you have those impacts, then it makes it more difficult to learn. We also understand that it's important For folks who maybe traditionally haven't been able to take advantage of water bodies, to also have that opportunity. So revitalizing those areas in some instances also.
And providing the access, ways to get access, to access that waterway.
Without a doubt. So all of that is a part of, and many other components also, of our revitalizing vulnerable communities. Mm-hmm. So for us, it goes back to the community, and the community is talking about what their vision is for their respective area where they come from, and what they're looking for. So it's addressing past and present impacts, but it's also about what does future development look like for you, and who are the partners that need to be a part of that process?
Yeah, I'm going to add a little plug for a project of ours that we're just kind of rolling out. It's called the National Green Infrastructure Certification Program, and we've worked with DC Water and 14 other cities to build this program so that it can a city can offer this training for folks. You know, it's aimed at people that you know, maybe didn't go to college and can take this training. They can then take a test and they can be certified to install and maintain green infrastructure, which a lot more cities are putting in. And so it's kind of, there's a lot of job creation potential around water, for sure.
And I'm glad you raised that because, you know, in many instances, unfortunately, we've got this divide in our country where we, you know, are being taught that either you have to be on the environmental side or you have to be on the job side. And that's just a false, you know, it's a false narrative. It's a misnomer, if you want to label it like that, because we can find opportunities like you just sort of highlighted where we can address both.
Yeah.
And we can help folks to be able to move forward in a really positive direction. We're at the Hip Hop Caucus, also a part of the Clean Water for All campaign that's going on. Number of different types of organizations are a part of that, helping to educate folks on the various types of, you know, opportunities that exist around water-related issues, also how to get engaged on the local level and the county level with your officials to make sure that, you know, the types of things that are being proposed can help you to move forward in a positive way. So I'm just excited because I see the opportunities. Yes, there are challenges that are out there. We got a couple high-level folks who, you know, maybe are not as supportive of, you know, some of the things that we know need to be addressed. But we always have to remember that they work for us.
The grassroots gets it done, really.
Without a doubt. Yeah. Without a doubt. So it's an exciting time.
Other term I wanted to ask you about, other word in your title is climate. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned climate change a couple times here. Yeah. You know, we accept it's real. What's the intersection of climate change and water and environmental justice that you're seeing out there right now?
Yeah, climate's one of those connectors, if you will. I mean, in some instances, some folks hadn't seen themselves being impacted maybe by some of the pollution issues we've worked on over the years, that type of thing. Climate is not a respecter of race or income or any of those types of things. Now, there are challenges that come, you know, when you're in those other categories and being able to deal with the impacts and recover and all those other types of things. But as we saw the wildfires in California and up and down the coast there, you know, lots of different types of folks were impacted. Those were climate related issues. When we look at these hurricanes and these floods, they rush through and impact lots of different communities. So for me, it is an umbrella over top of everyone. Mm. And it can either be a positive or a negative in that space. And the other thing in relationship to climate is that there's some real opportunities that exist also. You know, we can start to move forward on renewables, which will have less impacts on our water bodies because there'll be less pollution that's going into them. We can also make sure that if we're addressing climate properly, some of these drought related issues that we're going to be facing, that we can minimize some of those impacts, which are going to affect our farmers, but also affect folks' pocketbooks. The other, you know, related issue with water and climate is the floods. So it's not just about those impacts when those floods come. It's also pocketbook issues in relationship to insurance, if you can get it or if you can't, you know, and a number of other issues. It touches so many. I often say in relationship to environmental justice that it's a double whammy when we talk about climate. Yeah. In many instances, those communities are next to, you know, the coal-fired power plants or the petrochemical or some of the other types of industries that are out there. So people are getting those impacts. Mm. And then when the storms come, they get that second whammy So, you know, we really need to be very focused on climate related issues, both the impacts, but also the opportunities for us to get it right mm-hmm. and to move forward. I'm excited because there are so many cities, even though we have an administration that decided to remove itself from the Paris Climate Agreement, then a bunch of cities and states and other businesses,
companies, yeah,
they stepped up and they said, you know what, that's not the direction that our country should be going in, and we're going to do our part in being able to address what we can in relationship to the impacts. So, again, it's an exciting time when you see men and women of good conscience standing up and saying, we're going to do the right thing, even if you don't, and then we will hold you accountable in the not-so-distant future.
Yeah, you know, people are listening, not watching, so they can't see the smile that keeps popping onto your face. We're talking about kind of all these challenges and dire stuff, but I think, you know, when you say about opportunity and people really digging in, I think that's where that smile comes from.
There. Yeah. I mean, you know, today is November the 8th, I believe. I lose track because I'm in so many airports all over the country.
You are right.
Yes. And you know what? We have had some choices that have been made on the federal level. And then we had a recent set of elections where folks have said, well, we will share with you what our view is for the future. Mm. And if you are in support of communities, if you are in support of climate-related issues, if you are in support of healthcare, all those things that are connected with the issues we're talking about, then we'll be supportive of it. Mm-hmm. This should never be a partisan issue. It should not be a Republican or a Democrat issue or an independent issue. This is an issue about human life and about the stability of our country moving forward. And that's another reason I'm excited, because people are making sure that their voice is heard.
So, I mean, you kind of set up my last question, which was any final advice to listeners as individuals about how they can help with water and environmental justice issues. You just mentioned voting, which is obviously a really important way. You gave some great advice to the industry earlier about engagement. Any other advice you want to give to people as individuals in their communities with their families and friends about how they can make a difference in when it comes to water and environmental justice?
Well, on all issues, and water being included in that, I often share as I'm around the country that people have power unless you give it away. And that power translates into lots of different ways. It's not just voting. It's also your opportunity to make sure that your voice is heard. It's also the opportunity to engage both on the local and the county level on the decision making that's happening, and on the state level, which is so incredibly important, that you get engaged, understand what's happening, and then begin to move forward on that. The other part of it also is just spend time with folks. Mm. You know, go to an organization, you know, to their meeting or to an event that they're having that maybe normally you had driven by mm-hmm. or you just hadn't had the opportunity yet. Folks need to just spend some time with each other. That's the beauty and the strength of our country, is that when we break down barriers, realize that everyone and embrace our humanity and just say, you know what, we're in this together. It's interesting. I often share with folks, Dr. King said that we may have come to these shores on different ships, but we're now all in the same boat. Mm. Nothing could be more apropos than the understanding that we have the ability to make the change. We have the ability to come together. And actually embrace each other and say that we live in a great country. We can make our country even stronger and better. And that the way that we do that is by, you know, coming together in an authentic way.
Well, I think we'll leave it there. Great, great perspective and conversation, and really appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you. It's so good to see you, and continue to do the great work.
All right.
It's been a long, cold, long like it.